Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey guys!
Hello!
Welcome to Bring Your Own, a bookish podcast for romance readers. I'm Brandy.
I'm Kendra.
And I'm Kayla. And today, you guys, we have another special guest. We have Lila Sage on the
Woo-hoo!
Podcast.
Yay!
If you don't know who Lila Sage is, let me tell you, okay? Lila lives in the Wild West with her loyal companion, a sweet old blind rescue pit bull. Oh my God, what's his name? Her name?
Her.
Her name is Stella. Her?
Oh, what a cutie.
Yeah.
She writes romance that feels like her favorite thing, sunshine and big blue skies. She's the author of Done and Dusted, Swift and Saddled, Lost and Lassoed, and now, most recently, Wild and Wrangled. When she's not writing, she's reading. Welcome, Lila. Thank you so
Yay!
Much for coming.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
We're Yay. So excited. But before we get started with our questions, we have so many for you. What are we reading? What are we drinking? Lila, would you like to go first as our guest?
Oh my God, yes. Right now, I'm reading The Buffalo Hunter by Stephen Graham Jones, which is a horror novel, like a Western horror novel.
I've seen that cover. It's so interesting.
It's so visually striking. He's like one of my favorite author of all time. He is a native author who does just like fantastic horror. And I'm drafting right now, so I can't read romance while I'm drafting. Yeah. So I tend to like veer very far in the opposite direction, which is horror, but I think they're kind of similar, actually. And right now I'm drinking the last like remnants of my like fourth coffee of the day. So
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting you said that horror and romance are the same, because I went to go see Tia Williams and Allie Hazelwood at an event in Austin, and Tia was saying the exact same thing. She was like, she loves horror and like how much like the two genres have in common. Like, maybe I should get into horror. Maybe I'll like it.
You should. Know. And if Tia says it, like, it goes.
Right? Okay, Bible.
She's correct.
Yeah.
Love. I can go next. I am currently listening to Married by Morning by Lisa Kleypas, which is the fourth book in the Hathaway series, historical romance series. I am just loving it so much. I thought there was nothing that Lisa Kleypas could write that would top The Ravenels for me, just because I love that series so much, and I've reread every single book in there except for one. But yeah, me and the Hathaways, we are tight now. I love them. I have not been physically eyeball reading as much as I would like to. So Kendra, I'm so sorry. I'm still reading.
It's okay. I figured.
All the right places. I will get there. I will get, I like, it's not because I haven't been liking it. I've just been like, it's concert season. I'm an elementary music teacher. I don't know if I've talked about that on the podcast. I know I've talked about being a teacher, but it is concert season. So that shit's kicking my ass right now. But yeah, so I am drinking a Lemon LaCroix.
Nice.
Classic.
Yes. I'll go. I am drinking water tonight, guys. Very basic, very plain.
Wow,
like,
hydrated.
This is not the norm. I know, crazy. I want to drink so bad. That sounds bad. I want to, but I
wouldn't mind. It's past five. You're fine.
You're so right, queen.
Yeah.
And reading wise, I like Brandy. I have not been reading. Well, you've been doing audios a lot. I have not been reading at all. Mm-hmm. So. Still working my way through One Golden Summer by Carly Fortune, which is a blast. Like, I really like the book. Will I finish it? Someday, sure.
Yeah.
Of course. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
And I have, well, actually, I need to open it. Hang on. ASMR, maybe?
Oh, yes.
Gotta do the nails on the side first.
There you go. Wait, can you hear that? Do you hear that? Oh, I don't know.
God, yes. Yeah.
There, you did? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay. But I have an orange poppy today. No Olipop. Sorry, Kendra.
Oh.
And it's delicious.
Yeah.
Are you an Olipop
I'm Olipop
versus
girl.
Yes. Thank you.
Aren't the Poppy superior. The ones that got sued?
Yes.
Do I care? Not really. It tastes fine.
Oh.
I like either. Like, I'm not, I don't have a loyalty to soda alternatives, so.
Soda
I guess some of us just care about, like, our fiber content.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like, if I'm gonna put a probiotic in my body, I want to know that it's good for me.
So true. And the fact that Olipop has to be refrigerated and Poppy doesn't.
Okay, but here's the thing. You guys know that I'm a Coke Zero addict, and I'm trying to like get like at least drink a little bit less than that. That's why I'm just trying to drink a soda alternative. I don't care.
You know that Poppy just got bought by Pepsi too, right? So are you cheating on Coke?
I'm calling Coke Zero.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway,
get them on the phone.
Yeah. Enough about me. Or enough about my drinks. I am listening to, I'm also not eyeball reading anything, but I am listening to No Ordinary Love by Maya Ariel. Thank you so much, PRH Audio.
That cover is so stunning.
I know, stunning. It's really pretty. I literally just started it. I'm literally only 30 minutes in, but yeah, that's currently what I'm doing.
I love Maya's books.
Really? This is my first one by her. So I'm excited.
I really like her first one is a Second Chance Romance, and spoiler, I'm not like a big Second Chance Romance fan. I know.
That's so interesting. Even what we're gonna talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I loved it. It was like so sweeping and wonderful. So I do recommend.
Love.
I'm so excited.
Okay, so we have many questions for Lila. We're going to be talking all things Rebel Blue Ranch for the beginning of this interview. And then towards the end, we're going to get into some spoiler questions about Wild and Wrangled. We know the book has only been out for a few weeks at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a few weeks.
By the time this episode is out, yeah.
Yes. So we want people to have as much time to go and read it. If you have not read it yet, you can listen to the first part and then go read it and come back. We'll get started. Lila, what inspired Rebel Blue Ranch? I remember where I was when I first heard about it. It was on TikTok. You were going like viral for the stunning cover, which like
Lila, everybody wants your nachos now. Like, yeah, everybody's doing covers like this now. You started a thing.
You really did.
Yeah, it's great. Kendra, I also remember you made a video where you mentioned Done and Dusted, and I was getting tagged in that out the ass. That was like the first kind of like, yeah, you talked about Done and Dusted and one of Rebecca Weatherspoon's.
Yeah, I remember because I was reading I was reading cowboy romances. Oh my God, that was years ago. Lila, your brain. Oh my gosh, yes. I remember that.
Well, it was a really big deal for me because I was a fan of your content before Done and Dusted. And so I remember that I was just like, my friends were sending it to me. I was getting tagged in it. It was very, very special. So let me thank you for that.
Very full circle. That's so cool. Yeah.
I know. It's really fun. But I mean, I've said this before that, like, it was a dreary day in December, and I had just been rejected again on another novel that wasn't Done and Dusted from an agent, and I was just like, oh, this is so stupid. I hate it here. And so I was like, I'll just do it myself, and I was rewatching Friday Night Lights, like, my annual rewatch, and I went, Tim Riggins.
Yeah.
What if he, like, grew up and went to therapy and got his savings account? What would that be like? And that man's back must hurt because the entire Wild and Wrangled, like the entire series is built off of the back of Luke Brooks. And he was just like very much inspired by Tim Riggins. Like there's that scene in season 2 where he's like in the pool with like his arms like around like two women and somebody's like, I think he slept with one of their moms. Like I thought that was so funny when I first watched it, and I still think it's funny, and I was like, but can I make that redeemable? And that's how Luke Brooks came about. And he was the first one, and then I just kind of like started writing. I like write pretty obsessively, and now when I read like passages in Done and Dusted, I'm like, yeah, you were really just going like train of thought here, sister. Like you were really just like going for it, which I mean, it worked out. It worked out. There are lots of people that like really, really, you know, identify and love the book. And I think it works with the way that Emmy's brain is supposed to work in the book. But that's where the inspiration came from. And like right after I thought of, you know, Luke Brooks, like this like kind of Tim Riggins-esque hero, everybody else just kind of like fell into place. It went like Luke and then Amos. And then I had a I have the sticky note. I still have it. It's in my desk where I wrote out all four books and who they were about. And I stuck to it.
That's like really cool. Were you a romance reader before you wrote romance? Like, were there any authors where you're like, yes, like them, especially now? Cause you probably get to like work along or like are peers now with so many of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. This entire like gig that I'm doing is just a long game to make my favorite authors
your friends.
Be friends with me.
Yeah.
And it's working. It's really, really working. But I mean, the first like kind of Western romance that I remember reading was Tempest by Beverly Jenkins. And I had gotten into that. I read that in high school. I'd gotten into it because I really love Westerns in general. And like mm-hmm. Depending on what bookstore you go to, Beverly Jenkins might be shelved. That particular mm-hmm. series might be shelved in romance. It might be shelved in Western. It might be shelved somewhere between. And I picked it up and I was like, this is so good. I haven't quite made it to like make Bev Jenkins be my friend, but I also really like, I remember reading a Tessa Bailey novel in college and forcing it on all of my roommates. Like I was like, this is it, guys. It's called Getaway Girl. It's like one of her.
I can picture
the OG cover. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. With the girl it's literally on the red.
Mm-hmm. Yes. With the red glasses. And I remember like proselyting it to my roommates. I was like, this is what we need to be reading. And I think that like I love how unapologetic Tessa is in her writing. No matter what she's doing, she's gonna do it balls to the wall.
Yeah.
And yes. So I find that really inspiring, honestly. But as far as like contemporary cowboys, I hadn't really read a ton. I had read like Lorelei James, who's more like erotic romance, like erotic mm-hmm. Like erotica, somewhere between erotica and romance. I got really into Daphne Perry when I got into audiobooks, because she's mm-hmm. always had like really excellent audio productions.
She has.
And Kim Lorraine also has a great cowboy series which is excellent on audio. And so most of the contemporary cowboys are like when I was getting into audiobooks because I was in graduate school. But most of the Western like stuff that I try to model my writing after and like my sort of atmosphere after was like historicals.
Yeah.
I love that.
And it really comes through because like so many things get classified as cowboy romances, but I feel like you like made your guys cowboys. Like they're not just like living in a small town. I feel like that gets like, people will classify small town romances because they live in a small town as like cowboy romances, but like no, you have these guys like in mm-hmm. the field, like working the and like,
yeah, they're
yeah,
working.
Like,
uh-huh. They're on the horses.
They're also like, I have like a personal vendetta against rodeo cowboys just because of like the way that I grew up.
Yeah.
Like I hate those motherfuckers, and so I just really did not want, like I didn't want a rodeo cowboy like within a 10 mile mm-hmm. radius mm-hmm. of Rebel Blue Ranch. Also in real life they're all short and they all chew tobacco, and like I'm a 5'9" yeah. girl, that's not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, heartbreaking. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was very, thank you so much, Kendra. I was really actually super passionate about that.
Yeah, it shines through.
You already talked about, we sort of talked a little bit about how you originally self-published Done and Dusted in, is it June 2023 or around the summer of 2023? Yeah. But it quickly gained traction on places like Bookstagram and TikTok, and you got a deal with a Big Five publisher, which is so amazing. So can you talk about the re-release day for Done and Dusted and how that differed from like your original release? Because I'm sure it was like so different.
It really was. So the original release day for Done and Dusted like was insane, but it was only insane to me because there was no one in my life who had the scope, like understood the scope of what was happening when I was like climbing these Kindle charts, right? Like when I told my mom and dad, I was like, I'm like 999th on the Kindle charts. My dad just like thumbs up the message and didn't respond.
Yeah.
They're just like, so good. Like, so proud of you. And like, I'm sending them throughout that like 2 weeks that I'm just like climbing, right? And they're just like, hell yeah, girl. Like, do your thing. Like, and I had also got laid off very soon after Done and Dusted came out because I worked in tech. And so my mom was always like, okay, that's great. Like, have you applied for any jobs? The second re-release day, the trad re-release day was really wonderful because it was such like a nice marriage of mm-hmm. people who might have been familiar with Done and Dusted before and then a new audience. And I felt so connected to my community like right off the bat with Done and Dusted. So it was fun to bring them along.
Yeah.
But there was like at that moment, on Done and Dusted's trad release day, I think everybody who I love and who are close to me, like, got it. Like, when I could take them to Barnes & Noble and be like,
Look at
that's me. Uh-huh. And that was really rewarding because I like deeply, you know, love my parents and I have really great friends. And so for them to finally understand what I had done, just like in the confines of my bedroom a couple months prior, and also on my work computer when I should have been working, like was very was very special. I knew everybody in tech was like, we're headed for a recession. I'm like, you guys are gonna cause it because you're firing everybody.
No, yeah, like dead. Oh, dead ass.
And I was like a graphic designer, so you know the creatives are the first one.
Yeah,
are the first one to go. And so I was like writing a book, and no, and everybody in my life was just like, yeah. Because I've never, ever not done what I wanted to do, which is probably a character flaw. So everybody in my life was just like, yeah, she's over here. She's, like, doing her thing. And we'll just let her do it. We'll let this, like, she's always wanted to do it. But let's see how it goes. And so the re-release day was really special because I got to be like, I did it.
Yay!
I
love that. That's so
yeah.
I love that. You have since then released 4 books in the span of 2 years, which is insane and incredible and wow. How do you manage to keep up with that pace, especially now that you are traditionally published? And I feel like that is just a different schedule than when you are self-publishing. And then also you mentioned it briefly that you've looked back at Done and Dusted, like in those 2 years, like how have you seen yourself grow as an author?
Yeah, I mean, well, I wouldn't say that I'm well, first of all, when we're talking about, like, the release
the pace
schedule. I mean, when we set the contract with the Dial Press, I had no idea. Like, I knew that I had hit something that was special and that hopefully, like, I would have a really wonderful career. I did not understand kind of that Rebel Blue wasn't gonna ceiling out there, that we were just gonna kind of keep going. That was never like kind of in my frame of reference. I was just like, okay, this is great, like this is awesome. And so I do look back at that first contract sometimes and I look at the dates and I think, you are fucking crazy, like, what is wrong with you? And so I wouldn't recommend it, but it is nice. Like, I love how far away I am from a book by the time it comes out. Like, I finished Wild and Wrangled last June. Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a minute. And so it's so nice because it also, I think, helps me when inevitably some, like, obviously, like, you don't write a book for everybody to like. That's just not possible. Mm-hmm. It's not something you should strive to do. That's boring. Whatever. People are going to hate things and they're going to love things. And both of those things are great. Yeah. But, like, when sometimes, like, people who don't enjoy my books, it's like forced in my face, it does help that like I finished that so long ago, like I'm a different version of myself then. And I've like taken what I need to learn from that experience and we've like popped on to the next thing, like, so that's I really enjoy that about publishing. I don't think my workload has necessarily changed. I don't know that well because when I was an indie, I was really just like had access to Google and a dream. I was really just trying to figure it out. I was just like knee deep in Reddit trying to figure out how to publish this book. And so like, I don't think like some like indie authors have like an excellent workflow. And there are also some who are like really large, obviously, who have like teams and stuff, who probably would have like a different workload if they were trad, but my workload has pretty much stayed the same. My deadlines are starting to spread out a little bit more.
Love that for you.
Which is really, really nice. Very pleased. Both my agent and my editor, where I sent back the dates that I wanted my duet to be turned in, the Three Otter Peak duet, and they were like, no. they're like, do you realize you'll be on 2 book tours during this little time frame that you're going to turn stuff in? And I said, I honestly, no, I did not register that even a little bit. So it's really nice. And then as far as the growth factor, I need to preface this by saying that I'm deeply proud of Done and Dusted. And if I had an opportunity to change anything about it, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Do I think I'm a better writer now? Absolutely. Okay. Do I think that I, like, and I've been thinking about this a lot, been noodling on it, about how... maybe when I wrote Done and Dusted, I think my measure of success was just that people, like my measure of success and my measure of improvement was just that people would like it. And that got, like, walloped when Swift and Saddled came out, because Swift and Saddled, my baby, is the least popular of the Rebel Rent series, which is totally okay.
Can I tell you, that is my best friend's favorite. Like, she thinks about that book all the time. Like, she doesn't read. Like, she's like, Wes and Ada, hers. Like, it's people's
favorite. Them. Mm-hmm. I love them so much. And just, like, and I think it was, like, a little bit, like, it presents, like, a different sort of cowboy hero, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, a different,
because,
like,
he's so nice.
He's so sweet. But, like, Swift and Saddled is objectively, in my head, when I look at, like, the writing, like, I think it's objectively better than Done and Dusted, even though people might, like, identify more with Emmy's character, or they might prefer a hero like Luke. And so I've started to, like, that helped me kind of push me towards, like, different measures of success. It's not just about people liking my books. Like, my books have become more structurally sound. On a line level, they're better. Like, I'm, like, you know, I'm doing things actively in my personal life to, like, become a better writer. And, like, people liking it or not is not the end all be all the way it was when I wrote Done and Dusted. But I think that, like, comparatively, even to Wild and Wrangled, like, if you put them next to each other, I think it's kind of, like, ooh, okay. Like, I am, like, I'm really proud of myself when I see the growth there. And so, but, you know, with any luck, right? Like, that's your goal when you start, is, like, with any luck, Done and Dusted is the worst thing I ever write ever. Like, with any luck, everything gets better every time, whether it gets better in reception, whether it gets better structurally, or my voice gets clearer. Like, there are so many ways for a book to be better.
I think that's so cool and healthy and lovely, the way that you, like, that you're talking about, like, you're like, yeah, thank you.
But, like, I go to therapy.
The different metrics of success. I think that's so cool and smart to think of your books that way, because there's things to love about every single thing you ever create. So I love that.
And, like, I am going to speak for the three of us. Like, we've talked about it. We're like, yeah, like, you have grown so much from your first book. And, like, I would rather see that than anything else. Because then I, like, even listening to you talk right now, I'm like, oh, like, she cares. Like, you care about the work that you're doing. And, like, that means a lot. Because, like, you, I mean, it's very obvious to tell when someone's just in it for, like, other stuff. But, like, no, you care. Like, it's cool.
No, I care maybe too much. Maybe actually too deeply. Yeah. But it's just, like, and it's hard, right, when, especially when, like, again, Rebel Bloom, so proud of it. Thank goodness that it had, like, the amount of success. It saved me in so many ways. But it is really hard when you're in just an echo chamber of, like, no matter what, nobody knew who I was on June 5th, 2023. Like, 300, I had, like, 330 Instagram followers when Done and Dusted came out. And then on June 6th, when it came out, a lot of people knew who I was. And it's just kind of gone up exponentially. And I think even though most of the attention has been positive, I think making that shift and making that change, no matter what, it's going to come with, like, a little bit of toughness. And it's just really important to, like, find different, because you also have to kind of claw back the joy in this process, because, like, there's nothing worse for, like, a creative well than, like, the internet. And so you have to get kind of, like, really creative in the ways that you're going to continue to find joy in the work that you're doing, while also, like, now at this point, like, I'm providing something for others that I know that people are going to read. So it's, like, a balance, but it's, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. I do feel like everything I've done in my life up to this point has been preparing me to, like, you know, be Lila Sage and do this.
Hell yeah.
I love hearing that. That's
hell
great. That's
Yeah. Okay. So shifting gears a little bit with this next question, we've talked briefly about, like, your Instagram. We talked about TikTok, which, by the way, like, if you're not following Lila on social, like, you're missing out.
I just watched a Packing With You video yesterday. Came on my For You page. I was like, oh my God, love.
Oh. Okay.
Like, I just love, like, what you share about your life as an author, but also, like, we really love your outfits and how you dress. So that's why, like, go to her Instagram, go see her looks. They fit very well with the aesthetics of your books. Is that intentional, or was that, like, already, like, your personal style? Because, you know, like, you dress so well, I'm, like, jealous. Like, you're very well dressed.
Thank you, that's so nice. I love clothes, so I think, like, let's start there. I love clothes. I've always loved clothes. But I think maybe to, like, yes, this is my aesthetic in my real life. Mm-hmm. I think when I am like doing book events and stuff for Rebel Blue Ranch, I think wear more color than I normally mm-hmm. would. But anytime you see like a black denim outfit, that's mine. And that's been mine for a long time.
Sick.
Hell yeah.
And every like fringe jacket that I have, those are pieces that I've collected throughout the years that now kind of get to have like their moment, like more than just like going to the rodeo or like whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. I think my style is a little bit more y'alternative than just like y'all. And yeah. So, yeah. Well, because I grew up in a small town and then I went to college and I was desperate to like stamp that out. And so I was like, okay, Doc Martens and blue hair, baby. Like, we are really shifting gears. And so then like after you, then like, I kind of like I went too far one direction. And then I kind of came back in the middle and have kind of refined my style a little bit. And it's also fun because, like, I wore this top that had, like, cherries on it very recently. It's so cute, and, like, yeah, you would never catch me dead in that, like, in real life. Like, I never would have picked that off the shelf just because I don't feel like it fits with me. But when you're going to a book event and you just, like, want to be flirty fun, it's fun. It's been fun to, like, use this as an opportunity to push my style boundaries a little bit more. But I wear more, like, I like have like 9 pairs of cowboy boots. I've only bought 2 new ones since Done and Dusted came out, and only 1 pair has been like seen by the public because the other pair is my Wild and Wrangled tour cowboy boots that I've been coveting for a really long time.
Well, by the time this episode comes out, you'll see them. So
they're beautiful. They're blue, like a dark blue.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My favorite colors are blue, brown, and black, which is really vivacious and fun.
Yeah.
So it is my style, but like we definitely, like when we have an event, we kind of lean a little bit further and I wear things I might not be comfortable.
I know you said that some pieces are like vintage pieces or things you've had for like a long time, but like some of the stuff, like if you buy something, girl, you need, what are those called? LTK? To know it. Yeah, yes. You need an LTK. Get those commissionable links. Dude. Make that money. Yeah. That's what you need.
I like, people will say that in my DMs, and I'm like, who do I think I am? Like, I don't know. But my issue is that I am like, I'm a deal hunter. I'm a little deal, just like gopher. And I find things
full price?
That I,
no way.
Right? No. Mm-mm. Like, I find things that I want. Like, I'm always heavily on, like, Reformation or, like, Buck Mason, which are 2 brands that I really love. And I just find the piece that I want. I go to Poshmark. I set a little alert for when somebody's trying to sell it.
You're so smart.
And then I get it. Like, I very rarely will buy something. Like, I have to really want it. And I have to have wanted it for a long time for me to justify buying it new. But, man, I love just, like, because everything has a name. Like, every clothing item has a name. So I'm like, Reformation Kendi dress, Poshmark, Depop, Macari. I'm going to find it. I'm going to get it for cheap. And the tags are going to be on.
Hell yes.
You're so resourceful. Love it. Love it. Going back to the books, I guess, if we have to.
I know. We can't talk about those. The book is podcast.
No, I know.
We need it to know.
Yeah. You write really beautiful friendships throughout this series, especially Emmy and Teddy. You really see them throughout the series, but especially like in Lost and Lassoed. So how do you go about crafting platonic relationships that feel just as important as the romantic relationships as the author of romance books?
Right. Oof. I think what this comes down to for me is I do spend a lot of time on my characters individually before I ever start writing anything down, before like any story come, like anything before I write a first chapter, unless I'm being forced. Like, I will not write anything on a computer until I know what's up. Like, I work like analog until
I
feel like
your
I'm
notebook
ready to...
on TikTok.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My notebook. I'm afraid that a lot of people know what it looks like now because there's a lot of stuff in there. but everything happens in there until like I could feel like I could answer almost every question about my character themselves. I might not be able to answer all the questions about like their romance dynamic yet, because that's something I'm going to learn when I put them interacting together on the page. But like individually, I want to know everything about them before I start. Like, I've said this in a video, like down to like what toothpaste they would use, things that are like unimportant and that will never pop up in the book. But like, if somebody asks me, I could answer it, and I could answer it like accurately and confidently. And so I think that's like both Emmy and Teddy, like as individuals, you know, came to me as like very vivacious and tenacious gals. And I think a lot of the time when you have developed or retained those personality traits, it's generally from other women. Like that's something that I think that comes from like being one of the gals, and especially when both of them have such like masculine counterparts, right? Like Emmy is the only girl in her family, Teddy just has her dad, and so I wanted to make sure that these two characters had like an outlet to like just be one of the girls. And it was so fun to like craft their friendship around that, knowing that they get to be their truest selves with each other, no matter like what cowboy is like walking around and like being hot. Yeah, it's just like a joy. I focus a lot on their friendships. It's because to me, like, romance is a love story, and love comes in many forms. So I want to make sure I'm giving weight to all the different parts of it.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes that you've ever written is, "Luke is my fiance, my partner, my everything, but you're my soulmate, Teddy Anderson, and I'm the luckiest girl in the world because of it." I feel that way about my best friend. Like, I feel like she is, like, I feel like I was destined to meet her more than any other person in my life. So I love that quote.
Ugh. I love when people quote stuff back to me.
You're like, damn, you're like, buddy.
I
wrote that.
But I feel the same way about like my best friend too. And it was like, it was just so, it's so fun to explore relationships in general, because like people are dynamic and so many things can exist at once. And I really try to make like multifaceted characters, like even with like another best friend duo in the books, which is Luke and Gus. Like I feel like so often in romance, like you get told that the men are best friends, but you never actually kind of see them like talking. And so like I also wanted to make sure that like Luke and Gus were spending time together, that they're like being vulnerable in a way that like a man can be. And so it's just really fun for me to write friendships, to write sibling relationships. Like I just love the way that like each of these characters chooses to interact with their world, and not only is their romantic counterpart part of that, but everybody else is too.
I guess we're not there yet. Slight spoiler for Wild and Wrangled. I really loved Camille and Ada in this. Like, I thought that was so nice. Like, especially because like they're not as like, I guess, like popular as Teddy and Emmy. So like seeing them, I was like, these girls like really care about each other. And I loved how, especially Ada was like showing up and like, no girl, you need to tell me like what's going on. Like,
yeah,
I love that. Yeah.
It was fun to watch Ada be kind of fierce instead of like a little bit more of a wallflower. And I think too, like there are so many types of friendships, and I think Emmy and Teddy is like a very quintessential, like loud and proud and outgoing type of friendships, but not everybody's like that. Not everybody can be an Emmy or a Teddy. And I just wanted to show the Cams and Adas that their friendship is just as important and vulnerable and valuable too.
Yeah.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Since Done and Dusted was released, people were immediately clamoring for a Gus and Teddy story. And you mentioned earlier that you had already decided that they were getting a book. But can you talk about how you decided the order? Because once Swift and Saddled was announced, I think everybody was like, oh my God, like, when is Gus and Teddy coming? When is Gus and Teddy coming? And you're like, So what was the thought process behind putting them third, not last, not second? Did you know everybody was going to be so hungry for them when you wrote them?
Tell us everything. So I'll like talk about like my thought process, and then I'll talk about everybody.
Your reactions.
So, I mean, on a like on the sticky note, right, what was listed out was Luke and Emmy. Luke didn't have a name at this point, actually. I was calling him something stupid. I think it was Blake, which, what a mistake. And what a mistake. So I was like, Blake and Emmy, brother's best friend, Wes and Ada, boss employee. Teddy and Gus, hate, underlined three times. and then Cam and Dusty, second chance. And for me, I don't generally pick out tropes before I start writing unless there's something that has to do with the relationship that's just a given, right? Like, mm-hmm. brother's best friend is just a given because I know that Luke is her, like, that, and I know that Gus and Teddy are going to be best friend's brother just because that's how they exist. Like, that's where they are relationally. Mm-hmm. And so my first thought was, like, I cannot do these two things back to back, especially where Teddy and Emmy are very similar. They're the most similar of any two heroines in the series. And that makes sense, right? Because relationally, they're best friends. They spend a lot of time together. They obviously gravitated toward each other for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so, like, just, like, structurally, I was like, no, I, like, literally, I cannot put these two back to back. And then I was also like, these two, when I was writing, I was like, these two have literally not said one nice thing to each other. Like, they have not had one singular non-volatile reaction this entire book that I'm writing. And I can't just, like, then smush them together like Barbies.
Yeah.
And so then for me, like, I did, in my opinion, so a very sensitive topic with the gals. That's my opinion. And I am correct. I'm in charge here.
I was going to say, like, you get to decide.
Yeah, I'm in charge, actually. I gave Wes, like, all of the plot setup, in my opinion. Like, to me, plot setup and romantic tension are two different things. And so, like, I was, like, I gave him the plot setup. Like, him and Emmy physically go to Baby Blue. They, like, do their thing. But Gus and Teddy obviously had very tension-filled moments. And I didn't – I was, like, my only goal was to, like, earn back the money that I spent in creating this book enough so that I could, like, do Swift and Saddled. That was pretty much the only goal. And so I didn't think anything of it until my 40 arcs went out. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, all you guys are chill. But, like, then I went back and I got it a little bit more just because I feel like once one person kind of, like, hones in on something, it's like
you see it everywhere.
It's like a kid's soccer game. Yeah. Like, it's just kind of the amoeba situation where, like, everybody kind of, like, groups together. And I get it. I've done it. I am too just a girl. But I was really just like, okay, whatever. And I also really wanted to bring, like, Ada is the only outsider this whole time. Like, she's the only one who sees Rebel Blue with, like, fresh eyes. And so I wanted her to see Gus and Teddy and see what she thought before they were together. And so the order for me was, like, very well thought out, and I stand by it. If I had the chance to change it, I would not.
Of course.
I think
100%.
Like, Gus and Teddy, like, right? Like, that's just way too similar back to back. And people would probably, like, complain about that to me. And also, not only is Ada a different heroine than Emmy, but Wes is an extremely different hero than Luke or Gus or Dusty. Yeah. Like, Wes is very much just his own thing. And I think I was also really passionate about not being a one-trick pony. And that was before, like, Done and Dusted hit it big. I was like, I want to show off the bat that I can write different types of characters and that I can bring different things to this world and to this subgenre. So that was just really important to me, and I stick beside it. But it was, like, low-key kind of traumatic when everybody started kind of, like, going in about Gus and Teddy, and all of a sudden I felt like I was halfway through Swift and Saddled when Done and Dusted got indie published, and I was loving it. I was so proud of it. And then everybody's like, we don't want Wes and Ada. We want Gus and Teddy. And so I felt like Wes and Ada were, like, disappointing people just by, like, existing.
No.
And that was hard for me. And the thing is, like, that's the first time that person has said that to me, right? Like, that's what I remember. It's like, that's the first time they've said that to me, but it was probably, I'm not exaggerating, the, like, 50th to 100th time that I had heard it that day.
Damn.
Yeah.
And so, like, it kind of starts to, like, weigh you down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I found a lot of comfort in Wes and Ada because of that. I, like, clung to them. I was like, no, like, Wes and Ada taught me a very valuable lesson in sticking to my guns, and that's something that I've taken with me. And Gus and Teddy taught me a very valuable lesson in sticking to my guns as well. By the time it was time to sit down and start writing them, I was dreading it. because all of a sudden now, like, people have expectations and those are scary.
I remember your Instagram story about this so vividly, like, when you were talking about, I think it was actually when you started talking about writing Wild and Wrangled and about how different of an experience that was. And sorry, Kendra, I'm kind of leading into your next question. Oh, if you want to take it away.
Yeah. That was going to be our next question for you because of that, like, because we were all, like, following you and being like, oh, yeah, like, you've spoken about how different it was writing Wild and Wrangled compared to
Lost and Lassoed.
It's so hard, Lost and Lassoed. It's, compared I do it all to the time.
Lost and Lassoed. Because, yeah, like, we didn't know much about Dusty and Cam compared to, like, the interactions that we got with Gus and Teddy. So was that just, like, a breath of fresh air for you to be like, hell yeah, no one knows about these people? Because I will say, by the time I did get all the crumbs for Dusty and Cam, I was like, oh, I need them.
Yeah,
like, what was that experience writing Dusty and Cam? And also, like, it being, like, the last book. Like, you got to see something to fruition.
Yeah, I did it. I loved every second of writing Wild and Wrangled. It was a vastly different experience for me than writing Lost and Lassoed. Lost and Lassoed is, like, tainted with the writing experience. I love that book. Yeah. Like, I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud of how it turned out. But, like, when I think about Lost and Lassoed, it's impossible to not also think about kind of, like, this, like, pressure that I was feeling. And I just, like, Wild and Wrangled, I felt so free. I was having the best time. And I had been, it was intentionally left for last for, again, like, a million kind of, like, structural purposes, but also because I don't generally enjoy second chance romances, and I didn't think that I had the chops to write a second chance romance when I started out. And so I wanted, like, a little bit more practice before I dove into Cam and Dusty, because I, like, the order in which I came up with the kind of, like, very rough outline of people's story, it was Luke and Emmy, Cam and Dusty, Wes, Ada, Gus, Teddy. So that was kind of, like, how things fell, but I didn't want, like, I wanted to bookend Rebel Blue Ranch with two people who weren't writers who found their home there, so Luke and Cam. I wanted to bookend it with people who weren't necessarily part of, like, the nuclear writer family, but who had found their home and kind of everything that they didn't know they needed at Rebel Blue. And so it was intentionally left for last, but I also was like, I need a little bit of practice before I try to execute on this idea, because I'm really passionate about this story and I want to do the best I can in telling it. But I had a great time. I look back so fondly at Wild and Wrangled. It's the slowest I've ever written a book. I had a lot of extensions on the deadline, and I think that was probably, like, subliminally, like, me wanting to spend more time with them, because I felt very safe with Cam and Dusty, and so I think about it so fondly. And people always are like, why wasn't Dusty and Done and Dusted? And I think it's because him and Emmy have kind of a similar, like, they ran away and didn't necessarily want to come back, and I wanted Emmy to have her moment. But I just, like, knowing that they were coming was, like, they're kind of like my light at the end of the tunnel when I was really struggling through both Swift and Saddled and Lost and Lassoed. I was like, okay, like, they're gonna get here soon and it's gonna be okay, and nobody knows about them. And, like, nobody, like, you get some crumbs in Swift and Saddled, but, like, Gus and Teddy outweigh those crumbs. And so I was like, and that's, you know, on purpose, like, I want people to be hyped for Lost and Lassoed. I look back at it so fondly, and I am so grateful that that was, like, not the last time that I will be in Meadowlark and at Rebel Blue, but the last time for now. I couldn't have asked for a more appropriate and kind of, like, warm and loving goodbye.
Yeah. I'm so glad that that was your experience. Goodbye. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the last book, as opposed to the stress of Lost and Lassoed.
Yes. And, like, I am like, okay, let's, like, get me out of this town. Yeah. But in like a fun kind of running forward way, not in a running away absolutely. Way.
Dusty's not in Done and Dusted, that's so true. But, like, when he was introduced, it didn't feel out of left field, because sometimes that happens, right? You're reading something, you're like, who is this person? But he, like, you just made him feel so natural, and, like, his backstory with them, like, it just felt so, like, lived in already. So, like, you know, just giving you some flowers here today. I thought that was done really well.
Thank you. I am a Leo, so I do
love that. So obviously we've been talking about Wild and Wrangled, Dusty and Cam being the main characters. And this is one of our last spoiler-free questions before we have a couple spoilery questions. But Dusty is
as other people have described, kind of slutty, specifically with the way he dresses or like his physical attributes, right? So he has like thick thighs, he wears crop tops, he's got tattoos, nose ring, love. Yeah. So I'm curious, when you're crafting characters, how do you decide on their physical attributes? Are you like, I want this, or do you have something like in mind already? Like, what does that look like?
Well, I think it's informed kind of like by the relationship, like what kind of like love story we're going for. And for Dusty and Cam, like, it's very much like maybe like a good girl and bad boy, kind of, at least presenting. And with Dusty, like, being kind of slutty, I love a slut presenting man. I don't want a truly slutty man, right, but I want him to look like he could be. And I kind of like loved the way that like Cam would be forced to interact with that. Like, I think that's something very like, Cam's pretty shy and like very, when she meets Dusty, very sheltered and unexperienced, like just like doesn't have like any like true life experience. And so Dusty has already like talked his parents into like letting him get some tattoos in high school and like has his nose pierced. And then obviously he just continues down that path. And yeah, I just wanted like a slut presenting man. I also knew I was going to be up against a challenge when I knew he was blonde. And, you know, I had to, like, I love a blondie. That's for me. Okay. But, you know, I like, I do. I love, like, guys, I love Jamie Campbell Bauer.
I know you do. I see you on Threads all the time talking about that man.
I love him. I pirated Sweeney Todd in the seventh grade.
That's so funny. I will take, personally, I'm not a blonde in real life person, but fictionally, I've come to accept that those are some of my favorite men. So, like,
A fictional blonde is good. And, like, I knew I was up against a challenge, and so I was like, I gotta give him something. And I was like, crop top. Hell yeah. And he came to me with a nose ring, which I think is from Jamie Campbell Bauer, because Jamie Campbell Bauer used to have a nose ring when he was, like, in his punk band era, which, you know, I was probably 14, which means I was feeling a lot of overwhelming things when I looked at him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I just, like, I just, like, kind of, like, and I thought about that when I was crafting Dusty and Cam. Like, I wanted her to look at him and just, like, be overwhelmed. And, that's kind of where his physical attributes came from. I wanted, like, rings and, like, I just wanted more of, like, an edgy cowboy. Like, I mean, we all see him at, like, there's always Wranglers and there's always flannel. There's always going to be those things. Mm-hmm. But I wanted there to be, like, leather and, like, trucker hats. Because I always say, like, Luke Brooks is a baseball hat guy, but Dusty Tucker is a trucker hat guy. Mm. And, like, those are two different genres of men. Sense. Both of them are, like, slut presenting, right? Mm-hmm. Luke Brooks used to be a real slut, not anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, two different types of slut presenting men, but very different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I loved crafting Dusty. I, like, love him. Like, I'm so, it's honestly kind of bad. Him. Like, I'm so deeply
attached. You have a crush on your character,
like,
yeah.
Anybody's like, who's your favorite? I'm like, Dusty.
Duh.
Who else would it be?
Yeah. So. I just, like, you said that, like, he came to you with a nose ring. I just, like, imagining you, like, laying in bed having a dream and you just see a manifestation of Dusty with the nose ring. I'm sorry, that just made me laugh really hard. But
that's kind of what it was like. It was revelation.
Yeah. You just sits up straight. But we've talked a little bit about, in the very beginning, you talked about Tim Riggins and how you were a fan of Friday Night Lights. Yeah. I have to know, before we move on, who was your favorite, or, like, top two ships in Friday Night Lights?
Oh, obviously especially with Tim.
Okay, thank God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Lila and Tim.
I knew that.
Duh. Yeah, Lila and Tim. Easy. For sure.
Okay.
Hot. But I also, like, I don't mind Tim and Tyra. Like, I really, like, I don't hate, like, I don't, like, they're not my, you know, OTP here. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of fan fiction, sorry. For those who are unfamiliar, that's one true pairing.
We're big fans.
And so,
for the uneducated.
That's where I got my legs, is writing Aragorn fan fiction back in the day.
Oh, Aragorn. God. Hell yeah. Know,
Aragorn, of all the things. I was like, why aren't these people kissing? Somebody should fix that.
Yeah, you are doing exactly what you were meant to do.
No, because I truly firmly believe that there is not one single story out there that can't be improved with two people kissing. A very recent example of that would be Twisters.
Yes. Right? I literally didn't watch it when I found out they didn't kiss. I was like, correct. I'm good.
And what's crazy, right. they shot the kiss, and then they tested it with audiences, and they're like, we don't want it. And I think Steven Spielberg was like, yeah, take it out. Are you dumb? Like,
you tested it with the wrong fucking audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't test it with me. Yeah.
Me, personally. Another Glenn Powell example, Top Gun Maverick, him and Rooster should have kissed. I am going to die on that hill. So, again, yep. I just firmly believe that there's no story that can't be improved by kissing. Anyway,
yep.
I don't mind Tim and Tyra.
Anyway, back to Tim and Tyra.
But I mean, like, I think my favorite couples on there are like definitely Lila and Tim, and then like Coach and Tammy.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and the older I get, the hotter Coach Taylor gets, and I appreciate that.
I love that.
Something
man.
About That's him so with his chums on his sunglasses and his little polo shirts. I'm like,
okay. Sign me up.
Love yeah, him. Love, love, love him. I do love Matt Saracen, like, a lot.
Do you like Julie? Like,
I don't know. Okay. I think Julie's misunderstood. Like, I like her as a character. I like her as a character because I think, like, right, like, it's one of, like, the classic instances in media of, like, people wanting women to be perfect, and Julie is actually just a teenager, and teenagers are really shitty, especially to the people that they like and that they love. Yeah. Like, they just, they don't know
or
how
their
to
moms
do that yet.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I yelled at my mom in the American Eagle dressing room like 8 times a month. Like, I get it. Yeah. And so I do like Julie. I just think she's deeply misunderstood.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know if her and Matt would have ended up, like, realistically together.
Yeah. I could talk about this all day. I should stop. Okay.
We'll talk later.
We'll talk after.
Yeah. You mentioned being, you know, a Jamie Campbell Bauer fan. Does that mean that you're a Mortal Instruments fan? By chance?
Oh, absolutely. Fun fact about this. Huge. Huge. Okay, and I was there. Okay? I need to make this. I was there. I remember vividly. I was in the 7th grade when we found out Jason Clary were potentially related, and it crushed me. I was like, I'm going to have to kiss anyway.
Yeah. Do it.
But fun fact about that film... is it's one of the things that I bought on my iPod, and now it's just on the iPod, so I could watch it on the bus to school, obviously.
Yep. Yeah.
And, like, I'm just, and it follows me around. It's, like, the only, like, piece of, like, it's not physical media, but it's in my Apple library.
Yep, yep. Yeah. I still have
so no matter if I don't have Wi-Fi, I can either watch Mortal Instruments or National Treasure. Those are my two options.
I think I can watch Divergent, the first Hunger Games, and a couple White Collar episodes. I don't know
Yeah. I love that. I know now you're a Mortal Instruments fan, because I could just keep you here all day, but I can't. Oh my God. Okay.
I love them. Oh, I was there.
Wow. Kendra and I just read them, like, as adults, like, last year. We just read the entire,
I didn't have to wait when, you know, you had to sit with the sibling reveal. I didn't have to wait for it to be resolved. Yeah. So, Godspeed to you.
I was having, like, a moral qualm with,
should siblings kiss?
Yeah. Like, I was talking about it with my English teacher. God bless her. Like, I was like, you gave me this. Like, what am I supposed to do? And you know, she was like, I think you're taking this too seriously, but I'm so happy that you're engaging with literature.
With the text.
And now she reads all my books, so it's a nice full circle moment.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's so nice.
Oh, I know. I was such a weird kid, and she's probably like, thank God that girl figured something out.
I'm obsessed with that.
Okay, we are going to move into, also to clarify, they're not siblings. I always have to tell people that. Like, we're not just, like, chatting up incest here. Like, they're not siblings.
They're
like,
not.
I don't care if that spoils it for you. They're not. Like, you need to go in knowing that. Anyways, back to Rebel Blue Ranch. Yes, we're going to move into the spoiler section of this episode. Lila, when I read Lost and Lassoed, I got to the end, and I did it on audio, and we get to hear your lovely voice. I started crying reading your author's note, because you talked a lot about the relationship between Teddy and her father and your own relationship with your father. And you're a daddy's girl. I'm a daddy's girl. I think we're all daddy's girls here. How did you go about, like, crafting that relationship, and then, like, just, like, how that relationship impacted you in your real life, like, seeing them mirror each other as you were writing? Because, yeah, like, I get goosebumps when I think about your author's note at the end, like, yeah, I love my dad. It's like, sorry.
Same. I get it. And yeah, I remember when they asked me if I wanted to record it, I was like, no, I don't want to do that. Like,
I'm so glad you did, though, because, like, you did. Yeah.
I cried the whole time, and my stomach kept growling. It took several takes. I could never be a narrator, because those fucking microphones pick up on everything. And the sound engineer, his name's Ben. This is the only time I've ever interacted with him. He's like, Lila, we're getting some stomach sounds. And I was like, never say that to me again. Are you joking?
That is so rude.
That's so rude. Anyway, that's actually really dramatic for me. Oh, Ben, if you're listening to this, Ben. He did not. I recorded an author's note for Wild and Ringgold as well, and Ben was not there. And I was like,
thank God.
Yeah.
I said, thank God. I don't even hear any more about my stomach noises. But for Lost and Last, so I love my dad, and I really wanted to portray, like, a positive father-daughter relationship in a lot of different ways. Like, Emmy and Amos have a great relationship. Teddy and Hank have a great relationship. Like, Riley and Gus. Like, I think it was so important to me to portray, like, men that I know exist. And, like, green flag men that are soft and dynamic. And I think sometimes you get into this issue in romance novels where the only person that the man respects is the woman that he thinks is hot and is going to fall in love with. And I don't think that, like, is a good example of men in general. Like, I don't think that's something we should be potentially striving for. And so going into that, like, that was kind of like my frame of reference, is like, I just really wanted some positive familial relationships in there. And I just, I knew that. And Teddy and Hank are so special, because I think Amos has a lot of qualities of, like, my grandfather, but Hank has a lot of qualities of my dad. My dad is, you know, a former rock star, and him and my mom met at a concert, and he's such a soft, soft guy. I love him so much. And I had written, like, I knew this was going to be a key point of Teddy's story, because one of her, you know, main identifying, like, traits is that she's a caretaker, not just for Hank, but also in a more informal role with just the relationships that she has in her life. And so I had written the scene where Hank goes to the hospital, and, like, I had finished the book, and, like, it was already there. And when my dad went to the hospital right after I turned Lost and Lassoed in, and I got edits back on it when he was still in the hospital. He was there for a long time, and I was in Mexico for my friend's 30th birthday, and my mom called me, and she was like, honey, you have to come home. Because we genuinely, like, the doctor was like, your daughter's not here. If she needs to be here, like, she'll regret it for the rest of her life if she's not here when he goes. And so I, like, get on the plane, I, like, get home, and we were all so, so, so scared. And I will never forget. It was just, I have brothers, and they were gone, thank God. Because I was just a ballin'. And I was just, like, laying on my dad's chest, and my mom was, like, rubbing my back. I was, like, very much, like, 7 years old at this time. I was not a 28-year-old woman. I think I was 27 at that time. Young. Anyway.
Young, youthful.
And I just, like, my mom was like, what is up? Like, she's like, yeah, this is really, really sad, but, like, you're very upset here. And I was like, I think I accidentally manifested this. Like, I felt so guilty. I was just, like, sobbing. And my dad laughed so hard. He was like, I love you so much, sweetheart, but you are not that powerful. Like, you need to get a grip. And I was like, okay, for sure, for sure. Yeah. And so he brought, like, so much, like, levity to the situation for me. And I'm the only one of my siblings without a real job. So I was in the hospital with him. My brother, I've got a teacher, I've got, like, an analyst, like, they have, like, you know, they've got to be somewhere during the day.
Yeah, 9 to 5.
I did not. And so, like, I got to be with him throughout his recovery, and it just changed Lost and Lassoed so much. And I'm so grateful for it. Like, I'm so happy. Like I said, like, I do have some
negative feelings associated with Lost and Lassoed. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that I have that to cling to for Lost and Lassoed, that, you know, a piece of my dad lives in there.
Oh,
so sweet. Oh.
Well, okay.
I'll cry right now, yeah.
We gotta start telling jokes or something.
Okay, yeah. Next question. Yeah. All of us get off this immediately.
All go call our dads. Yeah.
Well, when people were starting to read that, like, I was getting so many DMs that were like, I had to call my dad right after. Oh, and
that's so nice.
The little essay at the end was not planned. That was not originally kind of, it's like the Dial Delights content. They always like kind of put something extra at the end. But when my editor was like, what would you like to do for Dial Delights? And I was like, fuck Dial Delights. It always gets tacked on at the end. And I'm like, oh,
God, like, I'm done. Like, yeah.
Like 3 months earlier. And I had written something in my journal, and I was like, okay, well, like, I have this thing, and I want to talk about my dad, because this is really important to this book. And she was like, okay. And then she read it, and she went, oh, shit. Like, was very much like, yeah, we got to put this in there. And so I'm really pleased with it. And my dad still has not read it all the way through. He gets through, like, the first three paragraphs and just cries.
Wow.
He's so proud and just so grateful, and I love my dad. I love him so. I love my mom as well. Wild Mangled is dedicated to my mom. She like gets some love too. She just, I asked her. She was like, "Why does he get all love?" And I was like, "Do you want to almost die?" Like,
yeah,
sure. I can swing something in there, but like, come on. But
are you the only daughter, Lila?
I am. Can you tell?
Yeah, that's it. I am also the only daughter of my father, and I think it's a.
Yeah, I'm just so deeply attached to that stupid man.
Yeah, I know.
Can't quit him.
Yeah.
Can't quit him.
Love that. Switching gears to Wild and Wrangled, throughout the series, we get to see how healthy the co-parenting relationship is between Gus and Cam. Like, literally, book one, like, you meet their characters and you know this about them, that they are great co-parents. So why did you choose to go that route versus like angry exes? And maybe it's because you already had decided that Cam was getting a book, but I would love to hear your take on that.
A lot of things. I think also, like, I was trying to, when I was writing Rebel Blue Ranch, when I started writing Done and Dusted, I knew that there were a million romances like this out there. And so I was starting, like, I wanted to think about what I could bring to the genre. And what part of my view, like my worldview, can positively impact this subgenre. And one of the things that came to mind that I'm really passionate about was just like a healthy co-parenting relationship and wanting to see that on page. Because I don't think like characteristically the writers have it in them to be like, because they're all a product of Amos, and like I had already decided what kind of man he was, and so it makes sense that that's the type of man that Gus is. And everybody's like, Gus is so grumpy. Yes, but Gus is a marshmallow. He's just marshmallow fluff. He's squishy. Like, he is a very soft man, because again, he's a product of his father. And so it just made that I couldn't see him being angry at a person who brought him something that he loves, right? Like, I couldn't. And somebody, like, he respects Cam. He sees Cam as a friend, which also I think becomes more obvious in Wild and Wrangled when you kind of learn more about their past. Like, he sees her as a friend, somebody that he likes, that he enjoys her company. And I just couldn't see him ever kind of, like, switching up on that. And so it's just important to me to see it on page. And, you know, with how deeply the writers care about Riley, I find it impossible that they would not welcome her mom in the same way.
I love that.
So true.
One of the best parts of Wild and Wrangled, in my opinion anyway, that's my opinion, I say that like I can't stop saying that recently. It's an old meme, but I've been saying it way too much recently.
It's a good vocal stem for sure.
Is the scenes that give readers insight into the high school relationship between Dusty and Cam. I loved those chapters. Those scenes are where also Dusty's notes to Cam start, and obviously those notes are a huge deal at the end of the book. So where did the idea or inspiration come from for the notes that we see throughout the entire series? I love the one when he like gets caught in class. And he
has by the teacher?
That one was my favorite. That one was so cute.
Well, because that used to happen. Like, I don't think that, like, happens to kids, but, like, I had to read a note in front of the class once. And so.
Do you know what they do now? They do a shared Google Doc, and they type to each other on a shared Google Doc.
That is so boring.
And we catch it on their, well, we catch it on their, because we can see their screens on our computers. So we'll watch them just type to each other. Crazy.
It's kind of fun, actually. I don't think I can be, like, I want to be, like, my brother's a high school teacher, and some of the things that he comes home with, I'm like, I want to be there. Like, just let me in for the day. I just want to watch him. I don't want to be there permanently, like, more power to you. We love our teachers, but I want to be there for a second. Yeah, I want to just, I want to see what it's like.
So different.
But I, like, I love an epistolary element in a romance, and I, there was, again, like, they, in my head, they're, you know, in high school, somewhere around maybe like 2008 to 2010. Yeah. And so, like, I was just like, it was so fun to, like, be in their heads as high school students. And I think that I love the writing in those chapters because to me it feels like a young adult novel. And I grew up on YA, obviously. And so that was something I was, like, really, like, I was intentionally trying to shift my writing style to not just make her, like, a little adult, but a teenager. And so I had such a great time writing those, and the notes were, I can't think of anything worse than being inside a teenage boy's head. And so that's where the notes for Dusty came from. Like, so we can still kind of, like, get more from what he was like at this time, but without me having to, like, delve into the folds of his brain. No, thank you. I want to be there after the frontal lobe has fully developed. And, it was just like, I loved those. It was so fun. I wrote the flashbacks all in a row. Like, I didn't, like, I just, like, so it was kind of like writing a young adult novel. I just kind of, like, went from start to finish, and there's kind of, there's, you know, plot in each of them and something that moves the story forward. And I loved writing the flashbacks. I would say that's one of, I'm happy that it comes across as, like, something that is beneficial to the story and that people like, because it's one of my favorite parts of writing this book. It was such a fun escape. And again, I was like, it was so fun to do, like, overwhelmed cam, but also, like, especially with Dusty's parents, like, Cam realizing, like, one of the most valuable lessons that she learned in the story is that, like, love doesn't have to be earned from parents. And, you know, like, when Aggie, like, asks her if she prefers Cam or Camille, I think that's the first time an adult in her life has ever given her any sort of agency. And so I think those portions were so integral to her character and her and Dusty's relationship, and I had the best time writing them.
This book, not that this book isn't, like, a fun book, because obviously there's largely, you know, there's fun elements in it, but obviously it's quite angsty, you know, because it's a second chance romance, and so there's a lot of yearning for this person that they were once with before. But, like, yeah, the past chapters, I think, helped bring a lot lighter of an element in between some of the angstier chapters, and they were so fun to read. I loved them. So
Like, there's nothing more fun than, like, first love, like, right, like that first kind of, like, big love. I think, you know, even though it doesn't always end up being your last, Cam and Dusty are an exception to a rule, but I think there's so many, like, lessons in it, and there's so much joy in it. Like, I think, and hey, so I'm an avid journaler, and every year on March 11th, because I took a picture of it on Snapchat one time, the journal entry pops up with my first kiss.
Happy anniversary, or belated
anniversary. I know, I was a little late, but, like, it was recently the 16-year anniversary of my first kiss. Wow. Sean, buddy, hope you're well.
he listens, he's a listener.
No, he's totally a listener. But it was, like, and I went back to, like, that part of me when I was writing it. Like, I read my journals, because I keep them all. And, but that specific entry, I think, really kind of influenced the way I write Cam, because I was so overwhelmed, and I was just, like, I just, like, had so many questions, and it was so pure and so fun, and I also wrote about that kiss in exquisite detail, which, go me. I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Written in stars. But the best part of it is, like, I was, at the end, I was, like, and I didn't tell anyone except for, and then I was, like, 9 people. Because I've never once been able to shut up. So it was just, like, it was so fun. Like, I find so much joy in those chapters, so I'm happy that that came through. I think there's nothing more just fun than, like, young love.
Yeah.
Love. Obsessed.
So then, do you have a favorite scene from Wild and Wrangled that you wrote, and, like, how it compares, I guess, to the series as a whole, like versus your other favorite scenes from the other books?
Yes, I do have a favorite scene. My favorite scene in Wild and Wrangled is when they're in the gas station. I love that scene. I think it's an excellent kind of demonstration of Dusty's character and how much he cares about people and about rural communities. But I also think like it's the first time we see Cam be like kind of funny and a little bit less restricted and constrained. And that's also the first scene I wrote in the book. So I always kind of have like a, I think most of my favorite scenes are the first ones that I wrote because it's where all of a sudden like these characters are no longer just like people on a, on like in a notebook. They become like a real dynamic relationship that I get to explore. So I love that scene. In the past though, I love their first kiss when he's like, when she's like, I don't know what to do. And he's like, I'll come to you. I remember writing that and being like, this is so cute. And
snatched from your journal. So, like,
yeah, no, directly from the Lila Sage journal. God, I was going to ruin it. I had to... Also, me and Sean were like really dramatic. We were off and on all the time. And so he let another girl wear his jacket.
How dare he?
Sean. I know. I know, it was so sad, and I went and cried to my U.S. history teacher, who was just a man, and all he did was turn on.
He's like, okay.
He started playing Teenage Wasteland by The Who. Like, he was just like, that was the only way he knew how to comfort me. He just, like, turned on his radio and, like, turned it up, and was like, so, stay here, I guess. For sure. But that's... Again, like, I was a weird kid. I was, like, spending a lot of time with teachers, and Sean was cool, and so, like, it was, like, a whole thing. Anyway, but it was just so cute. And, like, I love, I mean, in the other books, I love the, like, mechanical bull scene in Lost and Lasso, also the first scene that I wrote. So fun. Love that one. My favorite line in the whole book is in there when Gus is, like, there are parts of her that, like, get to be everybody else's, but there are parts of her that are just mine. And in Swift and Saddled, my favorite scene in that one is actually the scene with all three writers when they're cooking. That was so fun. I was like, so fun for me to write. And then my favorite scene in Done and Dusted is probably, oh, that's a tough one. I do love their like little morning after sex scene when Wes knocks on the door. I thought that was like, that was also the only planned sex scene in the book when I was kind of like thinking it through. The rest just kind of like fell in there. I blacked out on the whiskey scene. I still don't remember writing that. Incredible. I was like, oh, she's thirsty. The logical train of events is for him to spit in her mouth.
Yeah, duh.
Obviously. What else would I do? Ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the whiskey bottle is like in chapter one, so it's kind of like my smoking gun, which I did not realize until after I had finished the book. But I love their like morning after sex scene and the like where they lock pinkies.
Cute.
They lock pinkies at one moment, which is like a second, but I'm like, cute. Nice. But I forget what happens in Done and Dusted all the time. People are like, this part, and I'm like,
you're like, yeah, sure.
That just makes you a reader. Yeah. Like, you ever finish a book and someone's like, what was it about? You're like, ooh.
You're like,
it was good.
Yeah, I really loved it.
No, I had an out of body experience. I wrote Done and Dusted in like a second. Like, so I think I was just like, and now I'm like, what's in there?
I love that. Lila, we'd love to play a quick little game with you before we wrap up. This is a quote game. So we do this sometimes where we'll just pull quotes from your books. You were just saying that you forget what happens in your books all the time. We love this game because we love just like finding out what sticks in your guys' brain versus ours and everything. So we pulled from all of the books so far, including Wild and Wrangled. So
cool.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And this can be anybody. This could be any character.
Yes.
Okay. It could be anyone. It could be Kenny Wyatt.
Yeah, and you can either say the book that it comes from, or you can say the character. Like,
Character.
If you're like, I know Teddy said that, but I can't remember which book, we'll take it.
No, and I feel like I will be way good at this with characters, I think, again, because I, like, know them so well, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, first one. When it came to blank, I was playing with fire, but I would happily walk into the flames for her.
That's
Luke
Brooks.
We started with an easy one.
We started with an easy one.
That's Luke Brooks. I remember, because I remember writing that and being like, and you're like, this is what the girls want. I said, this is fucking fire.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Let's see if you can keep this, build a streak. I think about you when I wake up and when I go to sleep. During the day, you just stand at the front of my brain and I can't shake it. When I'm with you, I don't want it to end. And when I'm not, I want to see you again.
I wrote that.
You did? I thought you were doing that because you were like, oh, that's such a, like, such a great
quote. No, like that, was it Cam? Did Cam say that?
Close.
Did Dusty say that?
There you go. There you go. Okay. Yeah.
We'll give it to you. We'll give it to you.
You're in the right couple.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Close. I have no recollection of that. None. Okay,
your
cool.
Most recent book, no recollection.
Yeah. That's so embarrassing.
Okay, okay, next one. Ready. If you like who you are, why is it so hard to believe that other people do too?
Somebody said this to Ada. Emmy.
Yes. Good job. Nice. Yeah. That was a good one.
Crushed it.
Okay.
Okay. Some people like to crack open a cold beer at the end of a hard work day. Me, Teddy. I like a crisp.
There you go.
Period. I could drink this club. Teddy likes a crisp Diet Coke. Period. Yes. Oh.
Period. Okay. Clean. Switch it out for Coke Zero. But I'll take it. I'll take either. You know, if the restaurant doesn't have Coke Zero, I'll take a Diet Coke. It's fine. It's fine. I'm not that,
if they have Coke Zero, I'll take that. Okay. Sometimes flights are out of Diet Coke because it's so popular, especially when you're flying out of Utah. But sometimes I do have a Coke Zero.
I can see that. Yeah, especially out of Utah.
When you're treated a certain way for so long, you start to believe that's how you should be treated. It left me feeling like there wasn't anything about me that someone could love.
That's insecurity. That's got to be Ada.
It is. Yeah. Oh, good job. Good job.
A soft little girl.
That's a good one.
I know. She's very, like, and she gets a lot of hate. That's crazy. I think people don't want healing heroines. They want healed heroines. Mm, like, they don't want the process.
But it's like the other way.
And I'm very protective of her. Yeah. No, so true. And I have to have this conversation with my editor all the time whenever I get pissed. Mm. I'm like, I have something to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's the same fucking thing.
Yep.
But I love her. Anytime anybody has anything bad to say about Ada, I'm like,
yeah, I know. I'm like, face. Hold on. Yeah.
Say, reveal yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. There is a time to let things go, but you also have to know when to hold on to something tightly. There's value in clinging to it and not letting it get away from you. This might be kind of tough.
Amos.
Good. Yes. Yeah.
Good. Wow, you're
killing this. Yeah.
That's like nobody like drops wisdom bars like Amos Ryder. So that was kind of a shot in the dark, but
job that.
Sweet. Okay. Some love stories burn hot and fast, but you two are more low and slow. It's strong and steady kind of love.
Teddy says that to Emmy.
You're so good at this.
You might have the crown right now out of all the authors.
Yeah, you might. I think you do.
Seriously.
I do. Well, again, I do I do kind of take this a little bit serious.
Yeah, you do.
I love that.
One of my favorite quotes of yours ever. I would never insult you by calling you something as generic as nice.
Are you guys flirting with me right now? Listen, Ada love. Like, listen, that's Ada. I feel like like I'm being wined and dined since you guys are like, giving a little bit of love, which is great.
It's so funny. As soon as you started, like, within two words, you could tell that she knew immediately what that was. Right, she knew it. Okay, last one.
I really, really love that one.
I know that voice anywhere. If I had slipped into a coma, it would wake me up. If I was 6 feet under, I'd dig myself out of a grave just to be closer to it, which was dramatic and startling and tragic and stupid, but it was true.
That is super dramatic, and that would be Cam.
Yes. Wow, good job. You crushed that.
That was a 9 for 9. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you 10 for 10 because you said the quote that we cut. Yeah, you so did. 10 out of 10. You crushed
excellent.
It. Yeah.
Good job.
I was a teacher's pet. So
hell yeah. I was going to say, do you like academic validation, Lila?
I do. I literally went to grad school for that reason.
Half the friends you've mentioned have been teachers in this episode. So teachers fed.
Oh, that's so embarrassing. I do have a real best friend. Her name is Lexi. We met in graduate school.
She's out there.
She that's will so be funny. Listening to this because she is she's deeply supportive.
Good job, Lexi.
So love you, Lexi.
One more silly question before we round it out. You and I have exchanged many DMs about the Bravo universe. What shows are you loving on Bravo right now?
Okay, I love Bravo. My two favorite things on the planet are Bravo and CBS. Like, I love Bravo, and I love Survivor, and I love Big Brother.
Okay, Survivor's obsessed.
Yes, perfect. And I also really, really love The Challenge, because you just, like, have to love The Challenge if you love all of these other things, right? Yes. But I genuinely, on Bravo right now, I don't think anybody is doing it better than the Salt Lake City ladies.
I'm rewatching it right now because nobody is scratching the itch.
Yes. Yep. They are, like... so good. Like, the it's giving me like Real Housewives of New York, like prime
I was gonna
time.
Say like, like season 8 through 12 of Roni.
Yes. It is so good. I'm obsessed with Bronwyn.
Me I think too.
People are like, she's so calculating, and I'm like, I love that. I love a girl with some forethought. Like,
yeah,
I love a girl with strategy. I don't give a shit. And yep. I unfortunately I hate Lisa Barlow now. I was fighting for her.
She had me in season 4 and at the beginning of season 5, and then that reunion was rough. That was a bad one.
So yep, I was like, you do not have me anymore. So that was hard, but they're doing so good right now. Or like, it's also reminding me of like the way that I think about it consistently is like also like prime Vanderpump Rules.
Yes.
I know Kayla, we talked a little bit about Tom Sandoval.
Yeah. On the Traitors.
Yeah. About how I think that he thought that people were actually getting murdered.
Yeah, 100%.
That is like, so funny.
That is like how he was like acting
the
whole time. But I just like...
He looked high all the time on something.
That's how he was always like detoxing.
Looks. Yeah, he was shaking after that. That man lives...
He was going through withdrawals.
Yeah.
So, but like, I just love like unscripted kind of game shows and... a nice unscripted reality television series.
Love it. I'm glad we're on the same page that Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is the best reality television show airing currently. Yep.
One time Jen Shaw yelled at me at a grocery store. So.
I remember you telling me that. I tell people that all the time. I'm like, I know a girl who got yelled at in Whole Foods about some chicken strips.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, because I was apparently blocking the chicken strips. Funny. Sorry.
Bitch. Oh
my God. Sounds like an SNL skit. Like, what? I know.
And now she's in jail, and it's probably because of karma for yelling at Lila.
That was that karma.
Oh, literally.
It wasn't the scamming the old people. It was, yeah.
No. I was just a college kid trying to eat. Yeah. Like, that's so funny.
That's crazy.
That's hilarious. Okay, and then rounding it out, our last question. There is a quick little mention in Wild and Wrangled about your new series. I caught it. I was like, oh my God, highlight. So can you tell us about your new series after Rebel Blue? And as of today, as of recording this episode, you just released the title as well.
I did. So Soul Searching.
This morning.
Yeah. Yes. Can you tell us about the series?
This morning. Yes. Okay. So Sweetwater Peak is a duet. There's two books. I didn't have it in me to do like another four booker right off the bat. And I love a romance that you can read as a standalone, but I was really drawn to the idea of having kind of like a true duology where one thing wouldn't make sense without the other. And so the Sweetwater Peak duet is something I'm really proud of. The first book is called Soul Searching. It comes out on September 30th of this year. And each book follows one of our twin sisters. The first one follows Collins Cartwright. And Collins is like a little bit down on her luck. She has been able to talk to ghosts her whole life, and now they are not talking back. And of course, kind of the main thing that you do when you kind of lose touch with yourself is try to get back in touch with your roots. And so she heads home to Sweetwater Peak, Wyoming, which is substantially less idyllic than Meadowlark. It's built on like cigarette butts and chewed up gum. And very, very similar to my own hometown. And there she meets, Brady, who is an upholsterer who moved to Sweetwater Peak, and Brady thinks that this girl is fucking nuts because she is talking to nothing all the time, or at least trying to. And so he's like trying to determine where she's at on like the hot, crazy scale. And it was so, I love Sweetwater Peak. It feels like, because I love horror, and this is not a horror novel, but there are like, I really, one thing that I am proud of and that I will give myself when in my books is that I'm good at atmosphere. And I really got to like dial the atmosphere up to 11 in this little ghost town and had the best time doing it. I felt so much freedom in Sweetwater Peak. Like, right, nobody knew what I was doing while I was writing this. Like, nobody had a clue. It hadn't even been announced that it was ever going to come. Like,
that is the closest I've ever felt to the feeling I had when I wrote Done and Dusted, where just like it didn't matter. Like I was just writing to have fun and because I love to do it. Oh. And it was just a joy. I look at Sweetwater Peak, I'm currently drafting the second one, but I look at Soul Searching with such fondness because I also didn't like it structurally. It's a little bit different and it just felt like I don't know if there was any place that could pull me away from Meadowlark except for Sweetwater Peak. It feels so meant to be. And the mention you get in Wild and Wrangled, right, is that Boone Ryder comes down mm-hmm. from Sweetwater Peak to attend a wedding. And Boone Ryder is a prominent community member in Sweetwater Peak. And so that's our little connection between the two. But that man is Grumpy Grumps. So very much inspired by like Harrison Ford. And kind of like what he like, just kind of like grumpy and ornery. But it was such a joy and it was so fun. Like I've almost dropped the title in like 27 interviews.
You're like,
and so Dial is like, we're feeding it out to retailers today. And I was like, excellent.
Thank perfect. God. Yeah.
Yes. And I think if this episode drops after, I think the cover is going to drop on April 26th.
Ooh,
so
this will be a little potentially bit before
by the time
then.
You hear this.
It'll be on.
We'll be close. Soon. So,
yeah.
So,
and we all know Lila has beautiful covers, so mm-hmm. it's gonna be amazing. I already know
this one is really, really, really Yay. Good. It's Austin who did Rebel Blue. I brought her a new challenge, and she rose to it in a way that like I could not ask for better. It feels like Rebel Blue's kind of like older, moodier sister because Collins is a very moody gal.
I love that. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Wow, I've never gotten to talk about it before. That was so fun. I just dropped so much. Dial's gonna be like, what are you doing? And I'm gonna be like talking to the girls.
Yapping to the gals.
Dial, that means she has to come back. So keep her in business. So that way she can come back and we can talk all about it. Oh my God, and the fact that it's coming out in September, Halloween read, like that's gonna be perfect.
September 30th. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. It's right on time. It was supposed to come out November 4th. And then like we kind of did the cover and like everything. And they were like, yeah, we got to bump this a little bit earlier.
Pre-Halloween.
Which I'm thrilled about. I'm really, again, like I'm deeply proud of it. I think... like, obviously, you never know what the reception's going to be, but I know, like, we talked about how there are so many different kind of metrics of what make books better. This is, like, structurally and on the line level, the best thing I've ever written.
Yay! I'm so excited. My God, so excited.
Hey, yes. Dial, we'd all love ARCs, and please get her the best narrators on the planet, because we will be tuned in. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Do you already know that?
I'm actually working on something in the background for the book right now.
Oh my gosh, so, that is so exciting.
I'm trying to get PRH Audio to get me exactly what I want.
Hell yeah. And you deserve it. You'll have to come back in September so that we can chat all about it.
I'd love to.
Yeah,
like a fun little spooky Halloween.
So I would be happy. I would be thrilled to come back.
Yay, thank you. Thank you so much for being here today. We just had such a blast. Wild and Wrangled is out in the world. If you are listening to this episode, hopefully you can pick it up soon if you have not already. Lila has incredible audiobooks. They're in print. They are in ebook. You can read her books anywhere that you find your books. So make sure you are on that and mark your calendars for September 30th. We're going to have Lila's socials also linked in the description of this episode. So if you're not following her, get on it.
Yes.
For the outfits only.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Outfits,
everything, like her little writing tidbits, like such a joy to follow, such a joy to read. Thank you again so much for being here, and we can't wait to have you back. Yay.
Thank you. Bye. See you next time. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.